Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
You're listening to The Dialogue with Diwa de Boer on Reality Check Radio, where we discuss politics, power, and culture. You can text us your thoughts on 2057 or email inbox@realitycheck.radio. We are joined now by Elliot Ikile, who is a returning guest. Welcome back to the show, Elliot.
Oh, thank you so much, Diwa. Absolutely wonderful to be here. And you just a massive shout out to your audience as well.
Well, just for anyone who doesn't know the kind of history and context, you and I were both involved with the New Conservatives some years ago. That's sort of before that, even free speech protests was at least that was sort of the I think the point on which we met was defense of freedom of speech, and something that you and I have both continued to advocate for, at least freedom of political expression. And
yeah, it's been what, 2016, 17?
Yeah, it was around then. So we're talking 7-8 years now.
Jeez.
And you've recently moved on to Hobson's Pledge, and as an ambassador, an advocate for at Hobson's Pledge, you'll be across many of those issues. So you can give an update to our listeners, and maybe you and I can discuss some of the finer details. So the first point we're talking about, I think, was Matthew Hooton's recent attacks on Don Brash, calling him racist and saying he was just appealing to, or that he was just appealing to racists. And then he backed off and he had to give an apology because Don Brash said that I'm gonna sue you for defamation because that's defamatory, saying that I'm racist. When really what Don Brash is arguing for is what I would call anti-racism. He's arguing that everyone should always be treated equally. Everybody should
right.
There's no differences. You know, there shouldn't be any differences between people of different ethnicities or races or whatever you want to say. That's his position. And I think you can disagree with that and you can make an argument against it. But like calling him racist is the complete opposite of what he's doing. So anyway, you got involved into this. So I'm going to let you give a little bit of an overview of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it absolutely wild. I watched the interview and he was, this is my opinion, I think he was very unhinged. I think he was just very red-faced. And to me, at least, it seemed as if he was going off the reservation. He was just going crazy. So in his wordings, I would regard it as being highly defamatory. And, you know, there's been a lot of things going back and forward. I am privy, obviously, to a lot of what's going on between. So I can't say too much because there's a lot of process going on as we speak. There's a lot of things going back and forth. I was shocked at the level of what I would regard as venom and vitriol from Hooton. And it also started to, for me, I started looking at some of the things that he's been going on about over the last few years. And the mainstream media have termed him as a conservative. And I have to kick back on that. I don't think he is. I'm not exactly sure what he is. I mean, definitely he's got libertarian ideas and principles, but he seems to have a bit of a relationship with other entities who I think are very much opposed to equality, opposed to, well, in terms of us, Hobson's Pledge ideals. So while I can't say too much about it, I can say that I was quite shocked at it. I'm sure you can find it somewhere online if you were to hunt for it, but his rant was, in my opinion, unhinged and quite venomous. So it's appropriate that things have been done to stop the defamation and deception that goes on.
And one of the other big issues that Hobson's Pledge has been advocating on recently is the amendments to the Marine and Coastal Areas Amendment Bill. And what exactly is going on there with the foreshore and seabed? I believe that the courts have sort of tried to twist the current legislation into something it wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have had quite a few activist judges, and this is actually going back even when you and I were quite in depth with New Conservatives, where we saw some activist judges engaging in what we would probably term as very criminal-friendly behavior, as in they were letting killers and molesters out or on home detention. This, I think, is one of those times in culture where the judges have again attempted some type of activism, where they're saying things such as tikanga must play a part in terms of the marine and coastal areas. And the setting up of rahui and wahitapu, these are areas that iwi are able to put in place around the country, and they already have in some cases, where they put a rahui in where you cannot go swimming, cannot engage in commercial fishing, cannot fish for your family. And so with the activist judges who are making decisions around the marine area and coastal areas, we have got to push the government to bring the ownership of that area back into the public, into the people of New Zealand. Because if you have a look at it, nearly the entirety of the coastline is under an attempt to put it effectively under the ownership of iwi. And this is not a good place to be, because we fully expect that you'll get people being segregated from the beach and kept away from the beach at different times. And we've already seen examples of that already.
And historically, customary marine title, being part of English law, can give local communities some sort of basically special fishing quotas and special fishing rights over areas that their ancestors have fished for generations and generations going back, to make sure that those people continue to have access to fish in their own area. But this is, as you're saying, goes well beyond fishing rights.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. It's quite... if I might use the term, very much apartheid style ruling, meaning if you've got a certain skin color, or if you fuck a papa back, if you've got a particular genealogy, then you suddenly have power and authority over someone who does not have the same genealogy. And that's inherently wrong, has never worked anywhere in the history of the world. New Zealand is for New Zealanders, and we should all have the right to go to any beach at any time that we want to. We should all be able to go fish for our families. We should be able to take our children, go for a walk along the beach. We shouldn't be kept away simply because our skin color, our bloodline, happens to be different than someone else's. It's utterly wrong at a deep level.
And on the whole then, are you happy with the steps the government is taking to fix the problem that exists with the Marine and Coastal Area Act?
At the moment, it's okay, but there is a lot of devil in the detail style discussion to be had. Overall, it's okay. We would argue it's not far enough. We want to have race to be removed completely from. We think that the public should have ownership over those areas, that the people of New Zealand deserve to have, because we're New Zealand, no matter what your skin color is, no matter what your genealogy is. So at the moment, it looks much better than what it was before. We would advocate strongly for it to go further, to go into actual racial equality, not keep anything.
And on that subject as well, we've got the Treaty Principles Bill that David Seymour has put forward. And I've seen Don Brash complain about a nasty surprise in this Treaty Principles Bill. I remember asking you on Facebook a month or two ago now as well, what you thought about it, how Hobson's Pledge was going to respond to the Treaty Principles Bill, basically saying that the iwi should negotiate, and hapu separately potentially as well, should negotiate with the government over special treatment if that's what they want, but that the law should apply equally, everyone's got the same rights. But sometimes people can negotiate different kind of rights with the government. And that was something that you're concerned about.
Yeah, absolutely. Hobson's Pledge is a civil rights group. We are there for the equality of all people, that everyone should be treated as the same under the law. Now, the Treaty Principles Bill, as it shows so far, it looks good, but there are a couple of very big landmines in there. Because in one part, it does... not, I wouldn't say state, but the writing of it is that it will still seek to hold on to some of the race-based treatment, that some of the race-based treatment will remain. And that's a significant problem because, of course, what's the point? If you're trying to have an equal New Zealand for all New Zealanders, then that's opposed to what you're actually putting out there. Now, I can understand the pragmatism of it, which is to say that there have been legislated movements previous to this, even this government, around settlements and so forth. But if you're going to put out a Treaty Principles Bill, or you're going to have a look at the Treaty of Waitangi, then we should be going back to that nice, clean element that we had back in 1840, which is, of course, the first article being of the cost, you know, that ceding of authority, the acceptance of the crown. Then part two, which is that property rights aspect, that what's mine is mine and yours is yours, and we can engage in trade over it. And of course, that third wonderful article where everyone is to be treated the same, that everyone is given the same rights and privileges as those under the British Empire at the time. So if we are going to have a discussion of it, we have to keep it clean, not muddy it, in my opinion, to not muddy it with, well, we're going to go back to what it was in 1840, but we're also going to leave in some of the race-based bits as well that we picked up along the way. My position is that we need to have equal rights for all New Zealanders, that we don't give extra power, we don't give extra stuff to someone, some group of people simply because they've got a particular skin color. It's wrong. So we need to see a little bit more detail as to what's going on in this bill. So overall, it's okay. We just want to see a little bit more detail with it. But we are generally supportive of it as Hobson's Pledge. We just want to see a little bit more detail as well.
I guess the overall position is that it's better than the status quo. Sort of, it's an improvement at a minimum, maybe a step in the right direction. And really, you want to, well, if you're a purist about a particular subject, you want to get everything that you can out of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah. It's a lot better than what the 1975 bill. I guess it was put in good faith, but what's happened since is you've got the Waitangi Tribunal, which has just made extraordinary claims, and it's been even arguing about air being a taonga. And so, you know what, if you're doing a paragliding service, you need to be charged. If you're you're going down a river, you're doing some boat, well, we've got to placate the taniwha who exists down there. Some of it is absolute nonsense. And so the Waitangi Tribunal is, I think, one of the worst things that we've had over the last, I would say, decade and a half, maybe two decades. I think there was a time where they were useful, but they have long, long since run out of purpose, and now it's just basically control. That's what it seems to be.
Yeah, I've discussed this with somebody else who basically made the good point saying that it's an industry around it, so they have to justify their existence, and that means that the problem, it's essentially, if a government agency is set up to work on a particular problem, it can never fix that problem because it has to continually justify its own existence.
And I'll give you an example of how, in my scope, the Waitangi Tribunal, I think, is a direct threat to many of our institutions and mechanisms and our fixes for society. And one example I'll give you is this idea about prisons and prisoners who are currently in the correctional facilities. The Waitangi Tribunal, and I'm speaking very generally here, is the reason why there's so many Māori prisoners, because of racism, colonialism, and effectively white people. And what that does is that, first off, that's highly inaccurate. That is not the highest pattern. The highest pattern is broken home upbringing. And while the Waitangi Tribunal is trying to push this, in that case, what that means is that millions and millions and millions of dollars, most of it taxpayer dollars, is going to fund those people who are seeking to decolonize things and try to attack white people, whatever that means, in terms of trying to fix the prison numbers. And at the same time, that's why we lose so much funding in those areas that seek to build up the family unit, to repair the family unit, to look after, you know, family overall. And so that the Waitangi Tribunal, in their attempt to engage in these race-baiting ideas, also has victims. And in this case, the victims are the future members of our Māori whānau who are going to end up in prison because they come from broken homes mostly. And that's a core reason, but not under the Waitangi Tribunal.
That's right. And most of the victims of crime are Māori as well. So that means that if you're letting out more prisoners because of their race, then you're also going to create more victims based on their race, simply because most crimes sort of tend to happen not necessarily to strangers, but to people who know each other and are relatives. Unfortunately, that's where a lot of violent crime and so on occurs. And so
absolutely right.
A spiral, like they will only get worse and worse, and they keep complaining about intergenerational violence and intergenerational trauma. Well, they're just about to, they're in the process of making it a whole lot worse.
Absolutely right. I will also totally agree with you about that whole industry aspect. There's a massive industry around grievance, and it's money and power. And if you have a look at, for example, the Mahuta expose, where we found that many different members of a family were right engaged in all of that grievance policy. So, and then a huge amount of money and power has gone into her, what I would regard as an empire. Very strong, very powerful family, and it's almost entirely taxpayer funded as well.
And Tamahere is the same, where they're raking in the cash, and some investigations are happening there now. But yeah, as you say, they're just enriching their own families and at the expense of the rest of us.
At the expense of the rest of us, and those who they allege they are helping, absolutely not. And I know that because I see the families every day. Well, most days I have discussions with my people who I've had in my past around the North Island. So I have a lot of ears out there who know very well what's going on. And so, you know, these other ones, their pockets are getting fat. They are living in mansions. I'm not joking. I'm not exaggerating about that. They are living in mansions. In the meantime, the rest of us are doing all we can. We're hustling so that we can have a decent life for us and our kids. It's absolutely wrong.
And one other issue that's getting worse is around universities, especially the law schools have to teach tikanga as part of a separate body of law that's apparently different to our settler colonial legal system. And I see that Hobson's Pledge has just basically uncovered that the University of Auckland is giving mandatory Treaty Waitangi courses, mandatory Maori history courses on all students. So it doesn't matter what subject you're studying, if you're studying engineering or art or whatever it might be, you have to do this mandatory treaty course. And I read through the details on this. It's interesting to me because I studied at Manukau Institute of Technology, and we actually had this probably close to 12 years ago, mandatory Treaty of Waitangi course for anyone, no matter what you were studying. And it's interesting to see that has spread to all these larger universities now. And I guess, on the whole, what's your thoughts on what's going on with that and what their aims are?
Yeah, so again, I think it's one of those indoctrination elements, because we don't push for other courses to, I'm trying to think of an equivalent, to go over there and learn about, whatever they say, white people, colonial lessons. We don't do that. It's only tikanga. Now, first off, it's not fit for purpose, because you're there to do a lot of study. If you're at university, you're paying out thousands of dollars in order to gain the education for your course or that outcome that you want. And so if you're talking about computer usage, coding practices, what on earth does learning tikanga have to do with any of that? Does it make any sense whatsoever? I will say that I've got quite a nice full heart, because we learn of these issues because so many more people over the last year or so, we've heard from these people for years, but over the last year, we've had so many people now contacting us, advising us of the struggles that they're having, that they're really finding it tough, and it's because of these issues. Now, why I'm quite happy about that in a way is it means that it's no longer being, the fear element that the university academic wokes are trying to inculcate to people, the chilling effect, the fear factor of you can't say anything, you're not allowed to say anything, you have to shut up and you just have to grin and bear it. It's no longer making them so fearful that they can't even speak to others quietly. Now we're getting contacted by many, many different people who are giving us direct examples of what they're having to put up with. And I feel good about that, because at least it means that we're a trusted place. We won't throw them under the bus. At the same time, we are taking the fight up for them. And we absolutely love that. I will say, as well as that, with tikanga, is it's quite offensive to say, you're going to learn tikanga, because you're absolutely right. That is tikanga that they label it as. The problem is that iwi have very different ideas of tikanga. Tikanga is a very localized event for the different regions of Māori. That's why, for example, I will say that my blood is Te Atawa Ngāti Raukawa, that I was raised up in an area which is in Ōtaki. But the learnings, the tikanga that I learned was Tainui. Now, there are some massive differences. In some marae, if you do not take your shoes off, you'll be beaten up and chucked out the door. In some marae, if you are supposed to wear your shoes on when you go into the marae. Some, they separate the men and the women. Some, they mix it up on purpose. Some, the manuhiri tikanga is localized a different area. So then you've got to think, who is arrogant enough to be sitting there going, you're going to learn what I view as tikanga and tau Māori and all these other little woke words that they want to use. It's quite despicable, and it weakens not just the education of the students who are going to it, but it also weakens the idea of individuality within Māoridom. It's saying, well, my idea of tikanga is everyone else, no matter whether you're from the south or the north, you will learn under what we tell you to learn. And, you know, not just wrong, but it's crazy. It's creating division between the races as well.
I'm just casting my mind back to when I was at university doing these courses. We had to do ethics, and most people would turn up for that. And then it was the Treaty of Waitangi was being covered. Then I turned up to class for the Treaty of Waitangi. There's 28 students in the class, I think just shy of 30. Turn up to the class. There are three students in the class who turned up for the Treaty of Waitangi. And I came from a private school, didn't really know much about all of this controversy around the Treaty of Waitangi. And I'm asking some of these other students, I'm saying, why does nobody turn up to the Treaty of Waitangi class? And they said, we've heard so much of it. High school, they won't stop. You know, they go on and on about it. We're so sick of this. We're so sick of this Treaty of Waitangi this. And going through that course on the Treaty of Waitangi was quite eye-opening for me. It was just, you know, bashing the missionaries, bashing the government. And that was an aspect of politics in New Zealand that I wasn't familiar with at that time. The thing that I really, really noticed was how much the students hated it, how much they avoided it. And you'd had ones, even the Maori ones were sort of like, oh, I'm sort of ashamed of all of this stuff. You know, they were ashamed of it. And I thought, oh, this is terrible. I hope it'll go away. And we see now, 10 years later, it's only getting worse. And I think the attitude that students have is probably grown stronger.
Well, I was lucky. I went to a Catholic school, and the Catholic school I went to was very much fact-based. So they didn't take a political position in it. They were very fact-based. It was the good, the bad, and the ugly, but they didn't hide anything, and they spoke about it in very plain terms. So I was actually quite fortunate. I didn't realize how falsified much of the history had been conducted until maybe about 10-ish years ago, when I started to really engage in some of the, what do they call it, SIFs, but then it turned to Oranga Tamariki, started seeing the state departments and how they've very much fabricated and angled a lot of those lessons and those teachings. So, it can be a positive. Learning about the Treaty of Waitangi, I think, is a good thing, but not in the fictionalized, reformed, redefined style that we see in most of our schools today.
And as I said, that's why the students hate it. They just know that it's a whinge session, basically, for the teacher or the lecturer to go and talk about how bad the government is and how bad this person is and that person is. And there's no positive vision of it at all. It's very, very terrible.
Yep, absolutely right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, any last thoughts now on how the government are doing? Because we're running out of time. Thank you very much for joining me. But I'll give you a last word. Tell us, what do you think of the current government, and any encouragement for people to follow your work as well?
Yeah, so I'm overall quite happy with the government. They are making a pragmatic stance. They're doing what they said they were going to do. They've got their plan, and they have been ticking off as they go through it. They've been transparent in telling us as they do go through, which is just an incredibly marked difference from the last government. So I am overall quite happy with that. I would like some improvements done in terms of bringing New Zealand back to an equal place, as we treat all people the same. But on the whole, much, much happier than I have been for many years in terms of government. In terms of Hobson's Pledge, we are very excited. We're having a great time at the moment, and a lot of it is because we are getting so many people jumping on board, and they are really wanting to contribute. They really want us to push hard. We've got discussions every time I go out of Auckland. I've got meetup being requested wherever I go. It's really awesome. It's really exciting. And I just love the fact that Kiwis are pushing back on this racist status quo that we've had for years. And we are more than happy to be the vanguard, to be that force to step forward and to take those hits so that all of our people may stand up and, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, to be judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Elliot. And Hobson's Pledge and Elliot are both available on basically every social media platform, so you can go and find their work there. And they also do email newsletters as well if you go through for their website and sign up for those. And to all of our listeners, please stick around and we will be right back after this. Thank you, Elliot.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.